off the infinity, the oneness, the simplicity. Then you read the Talmud and you go through all these discourses of people talking over hundreds and thousands of years. And then at the end, you come back to simplicity. That those are all different states of consciousness. We need all those different states of consciousness, but you can't live just with the Talmud, too complex, and you can't live just with the simplicity. And so the task that we're going to be looking at this afternoon, we're going to start off simple. Let's start off simple. I'd like everybody just to take a nice cleansing breath. Excellent. Except for those of us that have had GERD or asthma or laryngospasm, most of us breathe very well. Simple breath. Then we're going to get a little bit more complex. And if you look at the handout, anybody not have a handout? Let's see. If you could share with those that don't have a handout, those that do. We only made, I don't think we made enough. Please keep your hands up. And those that could share with somebody close to them, we need just a few extra. Okay, thank you very much. Breath has a couple advantages. One advantage is it's portable. There's a wonderful book by Jon Kabat-Zinn which says, wherever you go, there you are. We could say wherever you go, at least on this earthly plane, there your breath goes. So that if we can learn some lessons from breath, we can then apply them no matter where we are, whatever the external circumstances. The second thing about breath is if you can imagine a lake with silt in it that's been spun around. The silt's going to be flying all around. There's lots of turmoil and foam or the ocean waves. If you're trying to make a decision or trying to think, it's very difficult to do that amidst the foam. If we can calm ourselves just for a moment, we can let the silt settle to the bottom. The lake becomes clearer, and we can see more clearly how we want to act. By the way, I have to acknowledge I'm from the water school in terms of the cantor. I need it for my voice, and so if you'll bear with me, please. Seven stages of breath. I'm going to go through these very briefly in a summary. All of you took a very nice breath just a moment ago, and we don't really analyze our breathing. But if you did, what you would notice is you take an in-breath. And as you take an in-breath, if you could imagine that you were a small child, a baby, even just coming from the womb, and you never had a breath before, imagine just for a moment that all of a sudden you're thrust into the world and there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to breathe. Imagine what you would feel on that first in-breath. Such gratefulness. Your lungs are working. There's oxygen in the air. The first lesson of a breath meditation is gratefulness. Anytime you're not feeling grateful, you can remind yourself to come back to the first in-breath and feel that gratefulness of a young baby. Now, our tradition is great with gratefulness. The Bodhi Ani, I thank you. Because when you wake up in the morning, you're like a newborn baby. You've just come from non-consciousness to consciousness. Think to yourself, what is the first thing you say or do when you wake up in the morning after you turn the alarm off? You start making a list of what we have to do. What our tradition suggests is just take an in-breath, Mode Ani, I thank you, and look at any part of your life for which you're able to say thank you. that you awoke this morning, that you can still breathe. All of us have problems, but we say start the day with gratefulness. The first thing, and one of the things I'm very grateful for, is I do my modea lying down. So I get to stay in bed a little longer as I do it. So I'm very grateful for the extra time in bed. Gratefulness, the first lesson. What I was going to do, and I think I'm going to shift it because we have a little bit of a time constraint, is I was going to go through each of these different and summarize them and then come back and go through them one at a time. And what I was going to say to you is after going through the first seven, that's really the summary of the talk. And then I was going to say to you, I would really invite you, as the rabbi said last night with the sermon, if you want to stay, please stay and commit yourself to the next 45 minutes. Then we're going to go through a series of sequences, and I really invite you as a group to let's do these together. Or if this doesn't seem like something that's comfortable for you, to please leave now, in a kind way. Otherwise, to make a commitment to stay. When our kids were younger, our first daughter, when she was born, I used to meditate with her, and I would hold her neck in place, and I would just try to breathe loving kindness into her. And as our kids became a little bit older, they would come to me with a problem or an owie, and the first thing what I would always do is I would say, let's take a breath, as I would hold them. And as they got a little bit older still and they came with a math problem, I would say, okay, what's the first thing we're going to do? Take a breath, Dad. Okay. Take a breath. And eventually when they went to college, they got pretty smart. They would call and they would say, Dad, there's a problem, but I've already taken a breath. Can I tell you the problem? And I would say, well, I'm glad you have, but I haven't, and I want to get clear. So let's take a breath together. You can help me. A few weeks ago, my wife and I took the first vacation we'd had in about 6 years where we didn't go visit one of the kids. And Our younger daughter said to us, we won't call you where you are unless there's an emergency, but could you please put a message on your machine? Hi, we're not here, but it's okay. Remember to take a breath and call back in a week. There is no situation, let me repeat that, there is no situation that we encounter in life in which it hurts you to come from a calmer, one step quieter place, no matter what the crisis. Let me go through very briefly how to take a breath. The most effective way to breathe is from our diaphragm. If you take two fingers, your two index fingers, and put them about 2 inches below your navel. I'm going to try to speak loudly. Can you hear me okay? What you want to do is just allow your breath to come into your diaphragm. And your fingers will go about a quarter inch apart. So it's just allow it. It's like an ocean wave, just. It takes a little bit of effort to consciously do that. First, we're always taught to hold our bellies in. And this is saying, let go. Secondly, it's difficult to do consciously what we've been doing non-consciously. For example, if I were to say to you, please swallow 3 times in the next 5 seconds, go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What do you notice? Your throat gets a little bit tight. It's like, where's the swallow? But you've been doing so well before. It's like the centipede and the butterfly. The butterfly goes by and says to the centipede, how do you manage to coordinate all 100 legs? And the centipede looks down and stumbles. Okay? You've been breathing really well. When we focus on it, there's a self-conscious effect. It's a psychological principle. It happens to everybody, and it passes. It's part of the process of learning. Diaphragmatic breathing. The research shows, brain and psychological research, that when you breathe from your diaphragm, your brain goes into an EEG alpha wave. When you breathe thoracically, your brain goes into beta. Watch yourself. When a car cuts in front of you, just bring it back down. Diaphragmatic breathing. Now, what's fascinating is your body already has this wisdom within it. When you sleep at night, you naturally breathe from your diaphragm. So the trick is to be as smart awake as you are asleep. Consciously focus on your breathing and let the diaphragm just come in and out. That's the first simple lesson of meditation. There's only two. Here's the second one. When you do that, when you're breathing from your diaphragm very gently, very easily, not trying to control it, but just allowing, you have a lot of thoughts. Am I doing this right? Well, wait, is this really a waste of my time? Why am I here? What do we do with the thoughts? For those of you that know the story of the troll that lives under the bridge, pretend for a moment that you're a troll and you're living under a bridge and the cars are going by. Cars are like your thoughts. You can't really control your thoughts. You can slow them down. The trick is, Albert Bandura says, the birds of worry are always flying overhead. Just don't let them make a nest in your hair. Don't get into the car of worry and start driving away, thinking, thinking, thinking. In meditation, you let the thoughts go, come back to your breathing. Come, let the water, let the silt settle down. You can always come back to the thoughts and the worries, but you'll come back from a clearer space. So, simple wisdom. Take a breath from your diaphragm, let the thoughts go. Any questions? Good, okay. That's the simple part. Now we're gonna start to get a little bit more complex. One more simple. There's a wonderful Zen Buddhist master, Thich Nhat Hanh. Here's his meditation. I'd like you just to close your eyes for a moment, please. It's a very simple meditation. Breathing in, I relax my body and mind. Feel yourself relaxing in body and mind. Breathing out, I smile. Feel your lips, the corners turn up just a little bit. Feel a little crinkle in your eyes. Okay, one more time. Breathing in, I relax my body and mind. Breathing out, I smile. What a wonderful moment. Okay, let your eyes come open as you wish. Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful man. Very simple meditation. Okay, that's our white piece of paper. Now let's get a little bit more complex. We can't just stay in a place of gratefulness with the first in-breath. If you think of the world in Bereshit, in Genesis, in the beginning, what happens? It's void and unformed. It's simple. It's the one page of paper. But then the wind of God, the Ruach, comes in, and we get night and day. If you think of Chinese philosophy, the term is Ujing, a wonderful term. It means the void or stillness. Exactly the same, different traditions, same term. The empty stillness, the Ein Sof. But then in the Chinese, the Ujing becomes, you know, the yin and yang symbol, night and day, dark and light. and the two becomes four. And in the 6 days, all the creation that occurred, the world comes from simplicity to incredible complexity. Think of your own life. Think of all the different roles you're trying to juggle. No longer just a baby breathing in. Parent, daughter, son, grandparent, trying to create work, trying to provide for a living, trying to keep your body healthy, trying to meditate and keep your mind healthy, trying to be a spiritual person. It's almost impossible. You have to be a magnificent juggler to keep it all together. The world gets very complex. And it's not enough to say grateful, grateful. You have to act, you have to do, you have to take charge. Breath has an answer. The second step. Take a voluntary in-breath. Beautiful. All of us can do that. All of us have to do that in life. If you look at any spiritual tradition, gratefulness is not enough. In Judaism, Moses leads the people to the Reed Sea. The water is there. Pharaoh's troops are behind. Moses says, God, you are just great. God, thank you so much. And a voice booms out, Moses, take a step already. You've got to take the step. God can't do it all for you. Gratefulness is great, first step. Second step is we have to act. We have to take charge. We have to make decisions. This is true in every spiritual tradition. Ramakrishna, from the Hindu perspective, God's winds are always blowing, but you must raise your sail. To reverse Rabbi Nachman, know that everything depends on God. Act as if everything depends on you. We have to do our part. Many of you already know this story. Rabbi Kushner tells it, but it's so wonderful. So I'll tell it quickly, but I love it. Harold Ginsburg, a very kind, honorable person, always does charity for others, always gives to others, never asks anything for himself. The lottery reaches a $20 million jackpot, and he says, God, one time, one favor, I want this lottery. Friday, the lottery comes and goes. He doesn't win. Nobody wins. Next week is $25 million. God, please, this time, the only thing I've ever asked, doesn't win. Finally, the next week, he says, God, I'm really frustrated with you. I've never asked anything. The one thing I ask, you don't give it to me. And a voice booms out, help me out a little bit, at least buy a ticket. We have to buy a ticket. We have to take that in-breath. Excellent. Questions on that? Gratefulness, first step, but then we need more. We need to take charge. Excellent. All of you can take that voluntary breath. Take it again and keep breathing in. More. 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 What happens? No more will go in. If you only use active control as your only strategy, it will inevitably turn into over-control. Those of us that are perfectionistic, those of us that try to control too much, those of us that become egocentric, is when control, which is necessary, becomes too much active control. We try to control things that we can't control. We become very egocentric. We forget the gratefulness. We forget that the lungs and the environment are there for us. Harold Ginsburg again, going to a charity function, has a tux, he's going to be honored. He can't find his cufflinks. He looks all around for the cufflinks, looks in the bathroom, looks in the kitchen, can't find them, looks under the bed, no cufflinks. Finally, in desperation, he turns to God, he said, God, I can't go to this without my cufflinks. Puts his hands up in supplication, God, please help me. Opens his eyes, cufflink in each hand. Never mind, God, I found him myself. We become egocentric. We're the eye that does it. An essential step, but it leads to the next problem. There's only one solution for over-control. Breath will tell you. Take the breath in again. What happens? You have to let go. The perfectionistic person, the person that worries about everything, you've got to let go. You can't just accumulate. What are the lines? He who dies with the most toys wins. That's the accumulation philosophy. Always wanting one step more. Wonderful story about a grandmother with her grandson walking on the beach. A huge wave sweeps the child out into the middle of the ocean. Frantically, she says, God, help me, please, just return him alive, please. Next thing that happens, a huge wave comes and gently deposits the grandchild miraculously alive and smiling at her feet. She looks at the grandchild. She looks back up at God. He had a hat. Always one step more. It's inevitable. All of us know that. The issue is, how do we take what was positive, the positive control of the in-breath, and breath says the fourth step, yielding, letting go. You've got to do it, and you've got to do it when you breathe. Questions? Okay, we're doing very well. Now, I don't know if you all know the concept of beggarly giving, but beggarly giving is the idea, which we can see in breath, where you take in, and when you breathe out, you go, okay? Symbolically, we take in more than we give back. You really want to take in, and letting go is an antidote to over-control, but it's wisdom in its own right. You have to let go to gain a higher level sense of control, to share with others and give. Lao Tzu, Chinese philosopher, calls it the way of water. When water hits a rock, rather than fight the rock, control in an active way, it yields and lets go, goes around the rock. And what Lao Tzu says, this is a very powerful control strategy. Eventually the rock gets worn away. In life, sometimes you want to yield. You don't want to always use force. There's a wonderful hum-along, which I'd like you to join me with, please, by Zalman Schachter. And your task is, I won't talk about what I've been told about my singing, but it hasn't been kind, but I'm courageous. I have the breath in. So what I'd like you all to do is kind of, and let me tell you this story, a little bit louder, please, thank you. Once there was a great Rebbe, and this Rebbe was going along in a wonderful carriage, pulled by magnificent horses. Poor person with a heavy, heavy bundle walking along. He says, poor person, would you like to ride in my carriage? The poor person says, yes, gets in the carriage, and they're riding along. Finally, the Rebbe says, I have only one question. The horses, the carriage, they're carrying you. They're carrying your bundle. Why are you still carrying your bundle? Just like it says in the songs, you might as well put your bundle down because God's carrying it already. There comes a point when we need to learn how to drop the bundles that we're carrying. Whether you believe in an existential, random universe or a spiritual universe, everybody has to let go. You have to let go when you breathe. You have to let go when you go to sleep. And our blessed tradition gives us the Shabbat, and it gives us Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Times to pause and reflect and put our bundles down. You must do it. Otherwise, you won't stay alive. You literally won't stay alive with your breath. The other part of letting go is forgiveness. And the rabbi last night eloquently modeled forgiveness. Forgiveness really has three parts. One is, as he did last night, we ask forgiveness of those who have hurt us, intentionally or unintentionally, by their thought, word, or deed. Second, we forgive those who have hurt us, intentionally or unintentionally, by their thought, word, or deed. And third, we forgive ourselves for the hurts that we've caused ourselves, intentionally or unintentionally, by our thought, word, or deed. Now, Yom Kippur is the sacred time to do that in the Jewish tradition. But just like the Modei Ani, every morning is waking up in gratefulness. The nightly prayer is every night going to bed in forgiveness. You're going to have to let go to sleep. It's a time to drop the bundles of anger that you may hold towards someone else, of guilt and bad feelings that you may hold toward yourself. I invite you over the coming year, don't just wait for Yom Kippur and take the final exam. Practice every night. Waking up in gratefulness, the first in-breath, going to bed with forgiveness. Letting go, dropping the bundle. Okay, we're now on number five. Number five is blending the in-breath and the out-breath. If you will, positive assertive and positive letting go. Courage to change, serenity to accept. But how do you blend those together? Buddha would often take the guise of a normal person, and he would appear to someone just as they were about to become enlightened, but were quite discouraged. And so the story goes, a person is walking in the Himalayas, tired, discouraged, and Buddha appears, but not looking like Buddha. And says to the person, how are you doing? And the person says, I'm so discouraged. I've struggled, I've searched for enlightenment, I simply can't find it, I'm ready to quit. Buddha empathizes, it sounds like you're a good psychologist, you're feeling really discouraged and really distraught. What should I do, Buddha? What should I do? The person says, and he's kind of calling out. And Buddha just sits there and kind of meditates. And at that moment, the person says, I'm so tired, drops his bundle. At the moment he drops the bundle, he becomes enlightened. He looks at this person that doesn't realize it's Buddha. He says, oh, thank you, finally, wisdom. There's a glow on his face, and there's moments that pass in bliss. Then the person scratches his head and says, well, what do I do now? And the Buddha says, pick up the bundle and continue your journey. After the out-breath, the letting go, is the next in-breath. That we really need to balance the times on Shabbat when we let go of our bundle, and then we pick it up again. In some ways, if you think about it with your breath, letting go of breath, out-breath, puts you in a position to be grateful for the next in-breath. Just take an out-breath. Let go. Receive in gratefulness. Each of these lessons are embedded in your breath. If at any time you feel you need more courage, you can do it. Take the in-breath. Any time you're being over-controlling and you need to let go, you can do it. The wisdom is within you already. Okay, this is a shalom chant. I need all of your help. And there's a colleague and friend of mine named Peter Alsop that says, he leads groups of singing. And what he says is, everybody must sing. If God gave you a magnificent voice, you've got to sing loud to show gratefulness. And if God gave you a horrible voice, you've got to sing loud to get revenge. So I invite everybody to sing, and it's a shalom chant. And let's just do it once together. It goes, shalom, shalom. Beautiful. Here's the lesson for the chant. That was the simple version. Of course, we can't stop there. We're going to have to get complex. Rabbi Lawrence Kushner, in his book, Honey from the Rock, says that each of us are a piece of the cosmic puzzle. We can't be all pieces, the over-controlling part of us. What we have to do is to say, what is our gift? What is the piece of the puzzle that we are, and develop that the best we can, and somehow trust that all the pieces are going to fit together. The Shalom chant can be an example of that. Is there anybody that's able to chant Shalom on the in-breath? Try it. Can't do it. You can only do it on the out-breath, okay? So your task is on the out-breath to chant it, and on the in-breath to receive whatever sounds you hear of other people chanting. Because if each person chants at their own pace, it won't be homogeneous. Everybody has a slower breath or a longer breath. So don't listen to the other person in terms of right or wrong. Everybody chant at their own pace, and let's trust that it will harmonize. When you're chanting Shalom, peace, feel yourself giving that energy to others. When you're breathing in, feel gratefulness and receiving the shalom blessings from those around you. Okay? At your own pace, let's just go through a few cycles. Said everybody has to go loud. Let your eyes close. Keep it going. Yourself, just receive that lovely energy from others as you've given out.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay.
Keep yourself in that space and just now quietly go into your breathing, receiving, giving. Thank you. Let your eyes gently open, and as they open, don't grab anything, but just notice colors, forms. Feel gratefulness for those that were giving you blessings, that those that you blessed. I'm going to show you an exercise. Johanna? There's a wonderful yoga diet exercise. Actually, would you all like to try this? Would you be comfortable standing up? Okay, why didn't everybody just stand and pick a partner? For those of you that want to just sit and go with your shalom, that's fine too. Okay, this is about receiving energy. This is about receiving energy and giving energy. So the first step is to let your palms face your partner. Actually, let us go through it once. Face your partner. Your palms are going to be down. And the first step is just breathing in, receiving, and letting your palms come up. Beautiful. One more time. Palms come up, receive. Now turn your palm towards your partner and share that energy with your partner. Okay? One more time. Receive energy, turn your palm toward your partner, share energy. Lovely. The next step is you raise your hands to the sky at like 2 o'clock and 10 o'clock. Now you receive energy again and turn your palms toward yourself and give that energy to yourself. Ah. Okay? So palms down, receive energy. Share that energy with a loved one, with a friend, with a colleague. To the sky, receive energy. Turn the palms toward yourself. Give it to yourself. And so the idea is, all of us need to receive energy. Some of us, some of the time, take too much. And we need to learn how to give more to others. Others of us give too much to others, and we need to learn how to receive energy and give it to ourselves. Okay? So one more time. Receive energy, turn your palms toward your partner, share energy with others. Hands to the sky, receive energy, turn your palms toward yourself, give it to yourself. Beautiful. Give your partner a hug. As the rabbis would do, please be seated. Can you see how the Shalom chant is giving and receiving? We need both. Can you see how the yoga dyad exercise is giving and receiving to others and to ourselves? We need both. The wisdom is built into the body. We give out carbon dioxide to trees. Trees give us oxygen. We need the environment. We share with the environment. Okay. Number 6, we're doing really good. See, it gets complex. We just thought it was just a simple breath, right? But it'll get simpler at the end. And we've only got 2 more to go. What you'll notice if you take a careful breath is it's in breath, there's a pause. There's just a very brief pause. Out breath, pause. In breath, pause. Let's focus for a moment on the pause, symbolically. The pause is this time right now, together, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The pause is Shabbat. The pause is that time when you take in your life to look at who you are and are you going in the direction you want to be going? Houston Smith, again, the author of The Religions of Humans, says, be careful of climbing the ladder of success. When you get to the top, it may be leaning against the wrong wall. The other one is, if you're lost, pick up the pace. Wrong, okay? Pause, see where you are, redirect. That's what Shabbat is. It's such a gift. Any of you ever done yoga? Show of hands. Okay, let me just make a couple quick comments about yoga. in terms of the pause and the goal that we want to then seek for transformation. In yoga, if you look at the scriptures of Patanjali, they talk about coming from a very centered place, a trusting place of who you are. If you do yoga and they say namaste at the beginning and end, namaste is a Sanskrit word, and what it means, I salute that which is holy, God or goddess-like within you. It's looking at the beauty within each person, so that every person you meet, you try to look at their beauty and do the same for yourself. Namaste. You start from a place in Judaism, the soul which you have given me is pure. You start from the place of there is a godlike holy place within us. Then in yoga, you try to stretch, but very gently. I'll call it the 1 or 2 degrees or 1/4 of an inch. But you don't want to stretch as a goal. You want to stretch staying centered. So for example, if I were going to do a very simple toe touch exercise, what I would do is I would take the in-breath, center myself, and then I would just let my hands come down where I'm comfortable. In yoga, always on the in-breath, you take in energy. On the out-breath, you let go a little bit more and stretch. In-breath, out-breath, stretch. In-breath, out-breath, just very gently, sort of feeling now it's starting to feel tight. Don't push, just very gentle, another 1/4 inch. When the rabbi last night, was a lovely idea on Sleek Hote to come up with your list of 10 or 12 things. Don't try to go for all or nothing, and don't try to do all of them at once. It's very nuanced, it's very subtle, but if you do it, if you try to forgive every night, and if you can't forgive the first night, say, I want to begin to try to begin to develop the desire to forgive. Okay, very gentle, very slow with yourself, compassion. One of the lines that I actually don't like in the service, and we do it on New Year's too, is, boy, did you screw up. You're no better this year than you were last year, are you? You didn't really change. That's very black and white thinking. We're much more nuanced. It's very slow, very subtle. In fact, there's even a story in the Buddhist tradition. Person hitting a rock, nothing happens. 100 times, 200, 300, 400, 499, 500, the rock cracks. That sometimes you have to keep working every night to forgive, to feel grateful. Often these things don't come naturally. Diaphragmatic breathing, but gentle practice. Trust yourself, slowly, slowly. Keep your list. Look for small changes. Small changes, gentle with yourself when you fall back. Come from a place of centeredness, gratefulness. Then stretch, let go. Think about what some of those little stretches might be. Let a car who's been waiting in the parking lot when there's a long line, go in front of you. Hold your anger 2 seconds longer. Pick up one more piece of litter. Think about it. If everyone in this room picked up one piece of litter a day, 200 people, 6,000 pieces of litter, dramatic improvements, slowly, slowly. Soft changes. Try to remember to say a gratefulness prayer in the morning or a prayer before a meal. Think of the blessing that we have food and the Birkat Hamazon, the blessing after the meal. The essence of that blessing is a feeling of completeness. After you've had a nice meal with friends, a feeling of completeness. Now, the first time I did the Birkat Hamazon, it takes about 15 minutes. And I remember saying to myself, if I'd known how long it took, I would have eaten more. Feeling of gratefulness. Sometimes it's going to be more assertive. To develop a courage to make changes that you want to make. To let go of habits that you want to let go of. To be less controlling when we shouldn't. Okay, this is important. We need to do this. Haiku poem. Basho, 16th century poet. It goes like this. Over the darkened sea, only the shrill voice of a flying duck is visible in soft white. Please close your eyes and allow whatever images to come up, come up. No right or wrong answers in poetry. Over the darkened sea, only the shrill voice of a flying duck is visible in soft white. Keep breathing and just see what you notice in that poem. What you probably notice is at one level, the poem doesn't make any sense. How can a voice be visible? And how can a voice be visible in soft white? Let your eyes again gently open. If you look at ordinary awareness, if you look at this poem, Over the Darkened Sea, only the shrill voice, the feeling tone that I get is Basho's walking on the beach, on the sea, and he's lonely, he's sad, he's feeling apart, dark, gloomy, shrill, fear, something shakes him up. Self is different than other. The bird is the enemy, shrill, fearful, scary. That's the ordinary awareness part of the poem. But then something shifts. Only the shrill voice of a flying duck is visible. In ordinary awareness, a voice can't be visible. We see with our eyes, we hear with our ears. But for those of you that play music, jazz, sometimes when you're playing notes, they have colors. In brain research, synesthesia, cross-sense modality. Basho goes into an altered state of consciousness. And in that altered state, his whole way of perceiving the world shifts. Flying duck is visible in soft white. Soft white is almost like a purr inside. That from the darkened sea, he shifted, same situation, and yet his whole worldview has changed. Soft white. He realizes there's a connection between he and the environment, rather than fear. The darkness has turned to light. This is the altered state of consciousness. This is the shift. And this leads us to, in a sense, the mystical state of consciousness in Judaism, but also our Shema. Before I do the Shema, I want to just mention Zalman Schachter, who says when he tries to go into this altered state, he uses any kind of phrase, like Melech Ha'olam, King of the Universe. Now, when he was telling this story, he starts off by saying, King of the Universe, okay? Think about that in just a moment. Then he goes, Melech Ha'olam, Melech Ha'olam. Let it fill you, Melech Ha'olam, Melech Ha'olam. And he said he does this for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and he starts to feel a shift in consciousness. A wonderful state like Basho was feeling. And what Zalman says at the end is, I feel in awe, particularly of that king who helped me create that state. What's amazing about that king is that she isn't even Jewish. The Ein Sof, the simple piece of paper. Shema as a guided meditation. If you would again close your eyes, please. We're going to go through this twice. The first time, word by word. Shema. Shema means to listen or hear or wake up. Wake up, self. Come out of your slumber. Take a breath. Become one step more conscious. Israel, that part of us that struggles with or toward God, That part of us that wants to get rid of the negative habits, the taslik, what we threw away, the list that we made. Shema Israel, wake up that part of us that's struggling for our higher self. Adonai Eloheinu. Adonai is the infinite God, beyond time and space. Eloheinu is that almost cuddly, kind, personal God. Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad is one. That part of us that's trying to wake up, that part of us that struggles toward God, the infinite God, the personal God, are all one. Try just for a moment to breathe with that. What might that experience be like of that oneness? Just for a moment, dropping the bundle. Just for a moment, allowing the out-breath. Feeling that even as you stretch to create and grow, like in yoga, you're already there, you're already whole. Feel that oneness. Feel that being embraced. Stay with your eyes closed, and we'll do it now as a breath meditation. On the in-breath, say Shema Israel to yourself. Out-breath, just feel that. In-breath, Shema Israel. Wake up that part of me that's working toward God. Next time on the in-breath, Shema Israel. And on the out-breath, Adonai Eloheinu. That God, feel the infinite God and yet a personal God. Doesn't make any sense, but feel it. In-breath, Shema Israel. Out-breath, Adonai Eloheinu. In-breath, Adonai Echad. Feel the Echad. On the out-breath, just feel the oneness. One more time. In-breath, Shema Israel. Out-breath, Adonai Eloheinu. In-breath, Adonai Echad. Out-breath. Drop the bundle. Try to feel what that oneness would be like. We're going back to the final simplicity now. As we go to lesson 7, let your eyes open one more time, please. Very gently. The final lesson is the final out-breath, a final letting go. Now, let me say at the preface of this that I'm in excellent health, as far as I know. I do this every year, this exercise of final out-breath, because in some ways, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's as if these are our final times together with ourselves. And so the practice of saying, if this is my final out-breath, by golly, I want to make sure I've given everything away that I have. And if you truly didn't know that you were going to wake up tomorrow, think how precious that final out-breath would be, just as that first in-breath was so precious. The tired, the hungry, the grumpy, which is part of Yom Kippur, fades if this is our final out-breath. Now, my sister said to me, who lives in Boston, Dean, yuck, depressing. You can't do that. She said, or is it depressing? It's not depressing. It really gives a quality to life, but there's some sadness in it, and we have to honor that as part of these holy days. Letting go is a psychological and biological necessity. You see it in your breathing. It's not easy. One columnist says, don't tell me not to be upset about getting older and illness and losing my youth. I get upset when I lose my sunglasses. Buddha said that life is impermanent, aging, illness, and death. Life is suffering, the first noble truth of Buddhism. Now, if I were making a religion, I'm not sure I would make life is suffering the first noble truth. But there's nobody in this room that doesn't know suffering. There's nobody in this room that hasn't been wounded. And we have to learn, how do we deal with that in some wise way? in the college dorm, it says, God is dead, Nietzsche. And underneath it, Nietzsche is dead, God. There's a biological reality that we all have to face. The biologist Lewis Thomas said, in 100 years, all 6 billion of us on this planet are going to be gone. And a new 6 billion are going to take our place. We simply don't like to think about that. This is the time to think about that. How do we prepare for this? Scary. I don't presume to know how to do this. For some, the psychological research suggests that it's helpful to address our mortality. And our tradition gives us a way to do that with the Unetanateka on Havdalah, when we say, into your arms, your loving arms, I commend my soul, we're letting go of the Shabbat. Every time you take an out-breath, we're learning to let go. Those that are able to face death first focus their mind and body in a way that's meaningful about life. Those who feel the deepest emotions about their own mortality, according to psychological research, report an enhanced appreciation of life, more compassion for those different than themselves, greater concern for nature and the environment, less concern for material possessions, more spiritual openness, and a greater generosity. In a medical journal a few weeks ago, a young child of 9 was dying of cancer. And what he was concerned about was his legacy, his baseball cards. And what he did was, with his outbreath, his final outbreath, is to say who was going to get which sports cards. With our final outbreath, we want to make sure we've given everything we have away. All of our love, all of our possessions, all of our cards. There's no way to avoid this lesson of outbreath. Jean Le Carré, in his book, The Perfect Spy, talks about the father who was a brilliant raconteur, very funny, and yet a liar, as a spy must be. And what Le Carré said is, for my son, I wanted to take the gifts that my father had, forgive him for his weaknesses and leave those on one side of the bridge, and carry across to the other side of the bridge what I could give to the next generation. That is our final outbreath, what we leave behind, our legacy. At the least, over Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, if you haven't made a will, make a will. That reminds us of mortality. Make a Jewish ethical will. What is it that you want to transmit across the bridge to the next generation? Look, this stuff is not simple. There's a great Hasidic story. Actually, let me ask, Carol, can we go 5 more, 10 more? Tell me what, 10? Okay, 10 more minutes. There's a great Hasidic story that comes from the Zen tradition. A person chased by a tiger, falls over a cliff, grabs a tree, looks down, huge cliff, jagged rocks, splashing water, thousands of feet down, looks up at the tiger, looks down at the water, looks at heaven, and says, is anybody up there? At that moment, a voice booms out and says, trust and let go. Looks back down at the water, looks at the tiger, looks back down at the cliff, looks back at heaven and says, is anybody else up there? This is not something we want to let go into. There's no right way to do it. If you think of some approaches, Dylan Thomas, do not go gently into the good night. Fight with all you've got. Take that in-breath. Others, into your arms, your loving arms, I commend my soul. Some combination, Loretta Lynn, when her spouse was dying, said, we fought like everything. And then at some point, I saw it was time to let go, and I said, I release you. You go around the corner now, and I'll catch up with you soon. What I do during this time, when I die every Yom Kippur, is I go through every person, and you can feel you want to forgive everybody. Why not? You want to have given all the love you have to everybody. Why not? All the wisdom. You want to have lived as joyfully and as gratefully as you could. And so the way I'd like to end is with called Metta Meditation in Buddhism, and it's been adapted in Judaism as a Hesed, loving kindness meditation. And it has three parts, and we'll go through each one of them. And if you would just close your eyes very gently, may I be happy on your in-breath. And on your out-breath, feel yourself giving yourself happiness. May I be peaceful. In-breath, give yourself peace. May I be free from pain and suffering. Bring compassionate awareness to any part of your body and mind that needs compassion, that is hurting, that is wounded. In breath, think of your beloveds. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. In breath, may you be free from pain and suffering and send those blessings to those that are your closest beloveds. Now we're going to do it. I'd like you to imagine those in front of you and next to you and behind you. You're going to be sending them blessings, but also on the out-breath or on the in-breath, you're going to be receiving blessings from them. So each of us is sending blessings to each other now. May you be happy. Send it and receive it. May you be peaceful. May you be free from pain and suffering. Feel yourself, eyes still closed, giving that love and receiving that love. Now imagine that you're taking your final out-breath. Notice how carefully, how mindfully you're aware of that breath. Some fear, some trust. Just notice all the emotions. You will want to have given all away, all your caring, forgiving yourself and others. Stay with that out-breath, letting go, releasing, feeling ahad, feeling the oneness, the simplicity, the clarity, the love. If a new breath comes after your final out-breath, feel how appreciative and grateful you are. Feel the gratefulness, feel the thanks, feel the out-breath, the letting go, the in-breath, the gratefulness. And after I end, let me share with you that I use this time as a silent retreat. So these are my words for the retreat. I'm going to go back into my silent retreat. But I'd like you to stay with your eyes closed, feeling the sense of love, of letting go, and of gratefulness. When you finally do open your eyes to prepare for the Nagila this afternoon, think when you go through Jonah and the whale. The Jonah is a story of transformation. The Jonah in the whale is actually somebody afraid and running away who then transforms himself in the quiet spaciousness of the whale's body, a meditative mystical experience. Letting the breath come in, letting the breath go out, feeling gratefulness and thanks, out-breath, releasing, in-breath, gratefulness, echad, amen. Just let yourself be with those feelings now.